seated, please. Sir, we're ready when you are.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Nate Skaggs. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Bellio Post. I'd like to ask for a two-minute rebuttal time, if I may.
Yes, sir. 2 minutes.
Your Honors, I have three assignments of error. This is a trial out of the Colonial Heights Circuit Court. First one, I'll go in chronological order here, but I'll try to focus on each one that I think has the most merit. The first one, obviously, that I allege, this is a case where the investigating officer, along with some others who weren't actually present at trial, were going through an alleyway of some crime solver tips of some alleged drug activity at this house where ultimately they searched my client's house. They go, they do a trash pull, they find in the garbage can in an alleyway. Officer wasn't sure, I appreciate her honesty, whether it was sealed or not, but within a trash bag, my client's mail addressed to him. And then some clippings and what appeared to be marijuana seeds and related material. Goes to the magistrate. The officer does, obtains a search warrant. I did a motion to suppress, which was denied at trial. Obviously, I'm very familiar with the standard that the court looks at for a motion to suppress. I'm not doing a reasonable doubt standard here. I've got a probable cause issue that I'm having to address. Certainly, I argued at trial and in this brief that when looking at the Janus case, they use the term nexus, that despite the fact that there were it was behind my client's house in this alleyway off of Norfolk Avenue, there was mail. Still, I argued that there was not enough nexus between the items that were found and probable cause to go find. So, of course, then whenever I go meet with a client in incarcerated, which Mr. Bellio Post was, as you all probably remember, meeting with many of your clients, whenever there's a search warrant, I then have to fill them in on the unfortunate Leon case, that unfortunate from my perspective, because not only is it, okay, maybe you got a bad search warrant, but then do we have one of the four exceptions in Leon? Obviously, it's the good faith exception. I argued in this brief that it's the lacking of the probable cause standard, not that it's something necessarily deliberately wrong by Officer Renee Walters in this case, but that the nexus was not there. So that's my argument. You've had a chance to read my brief on the motion to suppress. The second assignment of error, and the third, I feel, have a little bit more teeth. And when I was going through the facts of this case, obviously my second assignment of error is a constructive possession argument for all the items that are found in this red room, the desk. And I don't think, you know, I've not actually seen the record in this case, which you actually have. I'm assuming you have color photos, so you were able to see all these different photographs that were taken, and I didn't. Whenever, as you, again, you all remember when you're in trial, time just flies by, kind of like when I'm in here. I'm going through the facts of this case. I'm like, whoa, I did not realize that there were all these things that were found. Just item after item after item. So certainly the evidence is building right off the bat there because they found it. It's in the red room, which is an office that his wife testifies at trial, that she pretty much, he was the only one that ever really went in. He was primary, I guess, occupant, you say. She went in every other week. You had, I believe it was a restricted license application or something of fines and costs from another circuit court addressed to my client. On a bulletin board next to the desk, you have a picture. It's also in the appendix of him as well as some other folks that are in there. And then they find, it seems like, felt like 1,000 items in this one small desk here. They got all the little signs by it. But yet, in going, obviously, prior to my time of practicing law and prior to, I think, your all's time as well, when the Ritter case came down, I'm assuming it was a heyday for defense attorneys at the time. They were arguing constructive possession. How could you possess something when you're not even there? You know, if it's dominion knowledge, what's the dominion thing when it's, say it's over at the state capitol, how can I possess that? Well, Ritter fleshed that out, and that was the Hallmark case, and then everything that came thereafter. Primarily focusing on, well, it's not necessarily do I hold it now or do I have it now? What other facts and circumstances can the Commonwealth prove or point to indicate that? I think the main thing that they focused on in that case was it's not just presumption that you know, and obviously that's in the statute that I cited, because one of the items found was a controlled Schedule 1 or 2 substance. There's some marijuana paraphernalia in there. There was also some ammunition. But it's what did the defendant do, or in this case the appellant that the Commonwealth can point to say that there's more than just, you know, he might have known about it there. What did he do to try to procure it? The Ritter case was, and I might be misstating here, I believe that was the one where somebody ordered something in the mail. So they ordered marijuana in the mail, and the court said, well, you know, it was delivered to the house where you asked it to be. The guy supposedly asked it to be delivered to his mailbox. All these indicia will point that he was trying to get it there. Now, obviously, in this case, the Commonwealth pointed, and I know that Ms. Johnson was very quick to point out as well, look at all the stuff that would indicate that he knew it was there. Again, things I've already focused on. His house, room he primarily goes into, got the fines and costs thing up there, you got the pictures. But yet, Your Honors, we focused in arguing, even though those items are in there, this was a beyond a reasonable doubt standard in this case. We're no longer the probable cause for my argument on the motion to suppress. The Commonwealth, all they did was provide these things, but they didn't have any evidence showing that he had ordered it or procured it. There were no statements from my client. I don't think, in fact, he was even interviewed that indicated he knew it was there. So we would argue, Judge, and again, there was also, I think, some testimony from his wife about a weapon that was found in the house that she even said that wasn't his. That was found in another room. Wasn't charged with that, but that's, I think, relevant to going, say, because they found some ammunition saying it wasn't my client's. So we argued in this brief, and you've had a chance to review it, that the facts just were not there to tie beyond a reasonable doubt. Even though it all starts piling up, beyond a reasonable doubt is a high standard. That's the standard that the court had to review. Obviously, your standard is not only that, but is there plainly wrong issues going on here when it's a sufficiency of the evidence argument. That's the position that I is, and many of my colleagues are in whenever we bring the sufficiency of the evidence argument, and we're arguing in this brief as you had a chance to review. It's plainly wrong. The last assignment of error, which I believe is...
Can I ask you a little something on that, Mr. Skaggs? You've got the 5 marijuana plants, you know, in the basement that are sort of growing in plain view, and you've got the lights on them, too, to help them grow. Isn't it... How do we say, as an appellate court, that no rational fact finder could conclude?
Judge, that kind of ties into my second... Okay. Third, actually, assignment of error, because I think if you're going in your line there, there was also the testimony of what the prosecutor in leading I objected to, and they finally got it in, was these O sheets. These little things that were also found in there would say, well, sometimes when people are saying you're in this much and this is how much it is, obviously the marijuana plants in the basement are something that would cause, you know, light bulb to go off, because when I believe in the chronology they went there first and found that. I can't remember which room they went to first. But when you have these plants that are growing in the basement, that certainly would indicate perhaps this gentleman knew. Again, this is something where the wife said she only went in there about once a week. But still yet, the fact that you have marijuana plants down there and then they find all these controlled substances in this desk, it's apples and oranges is the best way I can describe, and that's how I would make my argument on that. But for the third assignment of error, I looked through the transcript and I don't think I saw it in there, but there was one point I actually asked either the officer or the technician from the lab, can we open up the bag and see what's in there? And the judge, it's not in here, I wish it was. He goes, woo! Because he said, oh, you're going to light this place up with all that smell. When you see the plants that were found, and I'm assuming you have a color photo of them, it's the only one that's actually a full-size photo. Everything else is just little small frames put together, 8 or 9 per page. In looking, can the court, in looking at in the cases that Ms. Johnson has cited, and also as I, Reynolds, that those plants, that he's possessing those plants with intent to distribute, in this case it's manufacturing marijuana is the statute, the weight of the plants themselves were very low. That was something that was indicated I believe total about a half or less than a half ounce altogether, including the stalks, stems, leaves, everything that was found. That's what the ultimate weight came out to be on the Department of Forensics lab sheet.
But the picture, I think the picture you're referring to is Joint Appendix 178. Certainly makes
yes,
it look
sir.
Like substantial growth.
Yes, sir. There's no, yes, sir. I'm sorry, there wasn't a page number, but yes, that's the one. And so in looking at those, in fact, it's kind of giving you an idea when you look in relation to what's next to it. These are not plants that we normally say see in other cases or we see on TV where they're about my height and you have just buds everywhere. In fact, the both officer as well as the lab technician testified there was no matured smokable material on these plants. Yes, there was a grow light. I know that the Ms. Johnson focused on, I think it was cultivating or something sustaining growth. Is there a water system or is there a grow light? There was a grow light in this instance here. They found bags throughout the house. They found Tupperware throughout the house. I think they even had pruning shears. They might have had a watering can somewhere. Apparently the basement was quite a cluttered place. But the question, and before the court, and what we have argued is, and I think it's the strongest argument we have in this entire appeal, was Mr. Belliopotes manufacturing marijuana with these plants? And looking again, Reynolds is right on point. It's basically stating that simply looking in that case, they had, that was a 29 plants in various conditions weighing 1.16 grams were found growing inside a home as well as scale and smoking device. Yes, there was a smoking device found, I think, in the drawer. There was a marijuana roach, which I believe is in one of the pictures on page 182, item 22. It's on the right middle of the page there. But in looking here, we have nothing that would indicate that these marijuana cigarettes, if perhaps the Commonwealth, and I know they were, they're saying, look at all the stuff we found. We got these O sheets here. You must have been selling in the past. Perhaps I'm not an expert in growing marijuana plants, and I'm not. But the plants that we have here, I would have to assume are very similar to other plants, that they either die or they get big or something, you have to harvest them. There's nothing that at trial could indicate that these were producing marijuana in the past. They're simply little saplings in jars. In fact, they're either mason jars or coffee ground jars. I can't recall what those were. I can't see the writing. You've got probably a color photo. But
I'm probably less of an expert than more of an expert than you, but
Judge Huff, yes.
But counting the bricks, it looks like they're about 12 bricks high. A brick stands 2.5 inches with a mortar, and so we're looking at 30-inch plants.
Yes, sir, about that. So I appreciate you helping me out with that one there, Judge. I never thought about that to make the argument regarding the height with the bricks. But still yet, our argument, Judge, there's beyond a reasonable doubt, was there plain error that a reasonable fact finder could not find that these were for manufacturing these plants, not other plants that might have been there at one point in time. Not that, obviously, he was smoking marijuana. There was...
But if you're going to manufacture, you've got to start them at some level, right?
So, I would assume so. Not an expert.
So if they're this big at the mason jar to start with, and then they're 30 inches high or 12 bricks high... At what point does it have to? How high does it have to get before it's manufacturing? I guess is my question.
Second part of the statute is not just manufacturing; it's for not for his own use.
Right.
So we have not like the case in Reynolds where there were 29 plants. We have 5 plants here. The question is, we don't know. There was no evidence of what these may ultimately yield if there's going to be enough smokable material for multiple people.
Just
for one
you're
person.
Aware, you're in your rebuttal time.
Yes, I apologize.
Okay. Ms. Johnson.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Victoria Johnson on behalf of the Commonwealth. I will focus on the manufacturing marijuana charge initially, if that's agreeable to the court. Here, Your Honor, we don't only have the low weight that we had in Reynolds, and that was something that the court really focused on in Reynolds. that there were 29 plants, but there wasn't evidence of how much they would produce, and there was a low weight of marijuana recovered at that time. Here, we have a plethora of other evidence indicating that the defendant was engaged in the business of selling marijuana. We have the packaging materials of varying sizes that were found. We have the O sheets that were found in the study that the police officer, who is a 19-year veteran of the force, who had been involved in over 100 narcotics arrests and who was recognized as an expert in the circuit court, testified that those were typically used as financial records by drug dealers. We have digital scales, which are an indicia of drug dealing, and we have the pruning shears and the grow lights or the grow light and things of that nature. So in Reynolds, the court noted that all of that other evidence was not in the record. So here, while we do have a low weight, reasonably low, I think the total marijuana seized from the home was something under an ounce, we have all of these other indicia of manufacturing marijuana and being in the business of selling marijuana. Now, there were also smoking devices and various paraphernalia found in the house that would be indicative of using as well. However, this court has never held that the two are mutually exclusive, and I think as a matter of common sense, there's no reason to assume that. People, you know, grow for their own use, and I assume grow for their own use and also grow to sell and manufacture. As to the constructive possession charge, Your Honor, again, this was Belia Pote's personal study. His wife testified that this is his space. He's in there almost exclusively. I think she said she came in occasionally. He'd occasionally have friends over. I think it was something in the nature of a man cave. And he kept all of his personal things there. These indicia of drug dealing and drug use and marijuana and heroin. And
so the highest... Had appellant lived there, his wife lived there, and was there anyone else?
I think there was also a child,
juvenile.
I believe it's the defendant's stepson, perhaps, because the juvenile owned the 410 shotgun, or rifle, I can't remember which. He owned that firearm, that the defendant wasn't charged with possessing that firearm or with the ammunition from it. However, there was some other ammunition found in the study that the defendant was charged with and was convicted with possessing. This was all of his personal space. His personal belongings were interspersed throughout. He had mail, he had financial records, he had legal records, he had his resume. These are all indications that the defendant not only knew about the drugs, but he knew of their nature and he exercised dominion and control over them. If there's other questions about constructive possession, I'm happy to answer them, or I can move on to the warrant. And just very briefly with the warrant, there was probable cause for the issuance of the warrant. Here, this officer responded to criminal complaints, crime solvers' tips, by going and doing a trash pull. The trash was outside the curtilage. It was sitting outside the fence. There was no expectation of privacy. That was never raised below. She looked in the trash and found what she recognized as indicia of marijuana possession. There were stems and seeds from a marijuana plant. There was a baggy corner that was knotted in a way that she recognized was indicative of illicit drug use or illicit drug possession. And she recited those facts to the magistrate. All the magistrate needed to find was a reasonable likelihood that there was criminal activity at the place to be searched. This is not like Janice. In Janice, there was a marijuana field in Hopewell, and nothing in the warrant affidavit to tie it to a home in Dinwiddie. So there were two separate locations. That's where the nexus was missing in the Janice case. Here, there's no such discrepancy. The officer named the place to be searched. She described it and stated why it was likely that there would be contraband found there. Upon executing the search warrant, of course, the officer found all of these things. I think they did a sweep of the house to see if there was anyone who all was there, and went into the basement and saw the marijuana plants, and then found everything, you know, this plethora of evidence and contraband in the study. And
since there's a lot of evidence, it appears, of his personal use of marijuana there, that's out there, What is it that really shows that, in addition to the OSHEET, I suppose, what else shows clearly that he was in the process of manufacturing, or this is more than personal use?
The scales and the digital scales and the packaging material. This court has frequently recognized digital scales and packaging materials, the baggies, the various size baggies, and the, I think there were also some little Tupperware containers or Gladware containers in there. And this court has frequently recognized those as indicia of drug manufacturing and drug dealing. Obviously, as the officer who was an expert in marijuana distribution testified, you know, customers want to buy various quantities of drugs. You measure them out on the scales and package them accordingly in the various sizes of packaging. And those three facts, the packaging materials, the scales, and the OSHEETs really point towards the conclusion that this defendant was running a small business out of his home, a small illicit business out of his home. And as for the low weight of marijuana, I think a reasonable inference from that fact would be that the defendant had recently sold out his stock. He had OSHEETs. He had less marijuana than one might expect. And I think that with all of those factors in mind, the court certainly had evidence to support its findings of guilt. There's other questions. I'm more than happy to answer them.
Hearing none, we thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Mr. Skaggs, any rebuttal?
Judge, I'll just be very brief, obviously. We'll focus only on the manufacturing marijuana.
Yes.
Again, in looking at, because I was able to finally find it, and trying to give the idea of a relation to the other statutes that are in the code, if it's possession with intent to distribute marijuana, if it's over a half ounce, that would indicate case law and would refer that is something that's more for personal use. Marijuana in this case was half, the total, including everything, was less than a half ounce. So I just bring that to the court's attention and ask that you grant the appeal.
Very well. Thank you very much. We'll come down and greet counsel and then